Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, August 28th. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from Mannix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York, specializing in search engine optimization and internet marketing since 1996. MannixMarketing.com. Joining this afternoon, and boy, are we lucky and are we happy, for Medical Monday is Dr. Jennifer Michaels of the Breen Center for Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services in Western Massachusetts. She's here to answer your questions about addiction, mental health, and related topics. We always, and I mean always, get a lot of calls when she's here, so get yours in now. The number is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Michaels, your calls and much more, all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us on this Medical Monday to discuss mental health and substance abuse issues is Dr. Jennifer Michaels, one of my favorite people. She's the medical director of the Breen Center, Berkshire County's largest community mental health agency. Dr. Michaels is also assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Massachusetts. She's board certified in both general and addiction psychiatry and has been in practice for more than 15 years. Dr. Michaels, welcome back to Medical Monday. You are a star on this program. We appreciate it, your being here so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments on our Facebook page, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. So let me start out by saying, you know, when you hear, and you've been doing this for years with us, there was you always warned us about the heroin problem as it was going to happen and as it was beginning to unfold. Now it turns out you were prescient, you were on the mark, and it's all over the place. There's a question there somewhere.
There's a question. I have a few answers to the question you didn't ask. Heroin, yeah, it's ubiquitous. And now I'm seeing something else, which is really terrifying. And that is, people are coming into my office telling me they're using heroin. And we at the Breen Center do urine tests. And what we're finding in the urine results is fentanyl, pure fentanyl. So what's going on the streets, fentanyl is being sold as heroin.
So tell us what fentanyl is.
Well, fentanyl is like heroin on steroids. You know, it's a man-made opioid. It's 100 times more potent, more powerful than morphine. And some of its analogs or cousins, chemical cousins, are 10,000 times stronger than morphine or than heroin. So people are buying heroin, thinking they're buying it, and they're actually getting these lab chemicals that are so strong that they're dying, within seconds.
Really?
Really.
So let me ask you this, Jennifer. When somebody puts something into their arm for the first time, let's forget about the kids for a moment. Let's say a 25-year-old decides they're going to experiment with heroin or with fentanyl, and they shoot up. Do you have any good answer as to why? What makes them stick that thing in their arm for the first time?
Usually it's not in a vacuum. Usually that person has experimented with other substances.
Like anything.
Like it could be, we know now that alcohol increases the likelihood that you'll try heroin. Now, does that mean most people who drink casually or suffer from alcoholism will use heroin? Absolutely not. We just know that drug use or alcohol use of any kind increases the likelihood that there'll be a next step into another substance. So, most people, if not all, do not start with heroin. There may be a few exceptions. So we need to be careful when we engage in any substance use.
But in their minds, is there no knowledge of what this stuff does to you?
I can't speak for them. I've never used heroin.
But you talk to them all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I just spoke to one of my patients who is doing beautifully. And then for some unknown reason, she ran into her drug dealer and she was vulnerable and she relapsed with heroin. And she said that at that moment, after being sober for years, it was like a disconnect in her brain. Logically, she knows better. She's aware of all she can lose. But it's a very primitive, reflexive response. It takes no energy to re-engage your drug. Or if you're 25, it takes a lot of energy to think of consequences, to think of the damage. And it takes no thought to just do what's in front of you that maybe your friends are doing.
I just wrote a column in The Eagle, which you may or may not have seen, which talked about how Portugal has decriminalized the use of drugs because at least you get rid of the black market, you can tax it, all the rest. You've heard this before. Bad idea.
You know, I think the best idea is that we flood the market with treatment. That treatment really works. I think that we do have too many people sitting in jail who have an addiction issue, and we don't treat enough of the people who are in jail. I don't know that something that works in Portugal would work here, but I think we're beginning to do things a little differently. I know in Oregon that there is some decriminalization going on. We'll see how that works out. But I think that people need help immediately when they're ready for help or they're in a jam. And I think if we could create that kind of system in our country, I think we'd do very well.
1-800-348-2551, the wonderful, brilliant Dr. Jennifer Michaels with us right now, 1-800-348-2551. Let me say this. Wouldn't it be great, Jen, if somebody who did that first experiment would call and say, okay, this is why I did it.
Yes.
And that would be very interesting to hear that. Or this is why what my son told me why he did it. These phones are there for you folks. It's your Vox Pop. There they go. 1-800-348-2551. So it all is supposed to have started, of course, with doctors overprescribing. Do you buy that?
I totally buy it. I think that there was almost this hellish collusion between doctors, pharmaceutical companies, and federal regulatory agencies. Pain became the fifth vital sign. Drug companies promoted OxyContin as non-addictive and safe. And busy doctors realized it took 3 minutes to write a prescription and 30 minutes to actually evaluate pain. And so we colluded in a way that has fueled this epidemic. And then we moved on to heroin. And now we're realizing, why grow poppy plants in other countries when you can create fentanyl in your local lab?
Let's go to Jared in Middletown. Okay, Jared, your turn. Go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Schartzbach.
Hello.
Hey, I just heard you say, wouldn't it be great if somebody who had done this could call in and try to explain why? So I thought I'd try to
take a shot.
Explain it. Yeah, take my best shot, no pun intended. I did have plenty of experience with other forms of recreation, swallowing pills, snorting pills, smoking pills, and it's kind of just the logical next step. You get curious about it. And a lot of people have a fear of needles, but you kind of get over that really fast, and you want to see what all the fuss is about. And that's essentially what it boils down to. It's a rush that's really incomparable. I can't explain it in words. It's basically everything that they tell you it's going to be, all that stuff about it being, you know, better than sex or any other you know, blissful feeling that you can think of. There's a reason that it's so addicting.
But Jared, what about the downside? I mean, does one consider? And I'm not looking down my nose at anybody, but I'm fascinated by it. Doesn't anybody ever say, well, you know, this could really kill me?
You're aware of that, but if you get to the point where that's what your life has become, you kind of don't really care about that anymore. And I've you know, I've spoken about this and written about it pretty extensively. I try to put it into context because I was curious as well. That the kind of detachment that you get from yourself, where you don't really have the self-worth or the self-preservation instinct that you know a normal person would have, you know, all that's kind of down the drain and out the window by the point that you're injecting. So it's really staggering the power of that this drug can take on a pretty healthy mind. And I don't know how or why I am still alive today, but I'm glad to say I have over 16 months clean, and I look back on it and it still baffles me. I still kind of struggle to put into words why this happened or why I continue to do it for so long, but I think that it's a great conversation to have, and I try to engage in it every chance that I get.
Jennifer, real quickly, because we have to get
sure.
a break.
Yeah, Jared, I just want to say, fantastic 16 months. We need more people like you talking about recovery. And I want to say that addiction is a brain disease, and it really is a damaging of the part of your brain that thinks logically, thinks of consequences, and then your primitive brain, reflexive brain takes over. And what you described is a perfect example of that.
Jared, thank you for your great call. Appreciate it very much. Okay, so the number is 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from New York Oncology Hematology, providing second opinions, immunotherapy, and clinical research trials for cancer patients, 30 physicians, 7 locations, newyorkoncology.com. Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, ACTSURG.com. The 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York, waterfront dining on their pet-friendly deck in the Hudson Valley, the1850house.com. The Gift Garden, Bennington, Vermont, florist and gift shop featuring fresh flowers, arrangements, green and blossoming plants, home decor, candles, gift baskets, on Main Street, thegiftgardenvt.com. And from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames, where eyewear is an art, visionexceleyecare.com.
Thank you, Zachary. We're back with the great Dr. Jennifer Michaels. There's really nobody better. We're so lucky to have her in our area. Let's go to Artie from Newburgh. All right, Artie from Newburgh, your turn. Go.
Hey, how you doing, Doctor? And Alan, how are you today?
Okay.
Hi. I am in recovery myself and actually work in the field. I don't have many letters behind my name, but I just say that the doctor, I am so happy that, you know, she's willing to say that, yes, there was this collusion in the 1990s where the FDA really did drop the ball on the number of prescriptions coming out. You know, and now those same kind of, big pharma is coming back and they're making money on the alternative, the Suboxone, the methadone, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it is a chronic progressive disease. You know, and unfortunately, people who do turn to the needle end game are in some kind of multi-substance abuse, you know. And at that point, it's kind of like, you know, you realize that you've gone this far and there, you know, people like to say there aren't many yets left in the opiate user's life. Well, you know, that needle is just one of those yets.
Okay, Jennifer?
Yeah, I just want to respond to what Artie said about the different medicines we're using today. I did say in the 90s, overprescribing pain pills was part of the problem. I do not believe that the therapeutic FDA-approved medications like Suboxone, like methadone, like Vivitrol are adding to the problem. They're actually saving lives. It's been shown that if people who have heroin addiction use these medications, it reduces the risk of overdose by at least half.
I totally agree with you.
Great.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You want to hear something, Artie, that's real interesting? Dr. Michael showed me a chart And I thought it was fascinating. Could you just give us those results, Jennifer?
Sure. You know, I gave it to you because you were talking about, like, why do people start?
Yes.
And usually it starts with another substance. And so in this chart, it shows that if you've used opioid pills recreationally, you're 40 times more likely to use heroin. If you've used cocaine to get high, 15 times more likely to use heroin. And this may surprise people. If you use marijuana, you're 3 times more likely to try heroin. Even if you drink alcohol, you're twice as likely to use heroin. Now most of the people...
I would definitely say that alcohol is probably one of the biggest prerequisites to what happened in my particular case. And, you know, with this fentanyl crisis that's out there, you know, they're finding that the Narcan, which is, you know, the... antidote in most of these situations, they're finding that they're not responding to 1-2 shots. They're getting 8-9 shots of Narcan to try and bring the people back. And
so is Narcan, I'm sorry, I want to ask both of you, so, Dr. Michaels in particular here, is Narcan addictive on its own?
No, Narcan is not addictive. It is the life-saving medication that we put into people's noses or inject into them that blocks the effect of the overdose.
I get it.
The problem is some of the new opioids that are being overdosed with, like fentanyl and carfentanil, are so potent. Just as already said, sometimes people need 5, 6, or 7 doses of Narcan to reverse the opioid effect. Uh-huh. Also, some of these medicines are really long-acting, so you have to remember that Narcan lasts maybe a half an hour, an hour and a half, and if the Narcan wears off, the person will overdose again with the medicine.
Absolutely.
So it's vital to continue to watch them once you've saved their life.
So
we're having a hard time, Alan, even getting Narcan kits to distribute for free. I mean, we train people at my nonprofit, and we're actually having a hard time. And I just think that people should know out there, you know, unfortunately, nobody is unaffected by this. This disease.
What is your non-for-profit?
Hudson Valley Community Services.
Oh, interesting.
We run a harm reduction program along with another, you know, a whole host of other opportunities. But us right now, we're harm reduction, and you know, we do rapid HIV tests, rapid Hep C tests. We get people into rehabs. You know, and we're really first line of defense
good stuff.
Unfortunately.
Okay,
we're seeing people come in, and it's the fentanyl and the carfentanil, which is a molecule off, apparently. So they're so important, these programs. And I just want people out there to know that, you know, we're having problems getting these kids.
You know, I'm going to interrupt for a minute, Artie, because what we've been doing at the Breen Center is we've been prescribing Narcan whenever someone comes in with an opioid use disorder or has a loved one with an opioid use disorder. And in Massachusetts, anyone can go to the pharmacy, speak to the pharmacist, and get a Narcan distributed to them. You don't have
free?
To be the it uses insurance.
Oh, okay.
But for Mass Rehab covers that, so it's a few dollars at most.
Artie, thank you. All right, let's go to, let's see here. Kathy, I think, because Kathy should be on line 3. I think Kathy's on line 3. Are you there, Kathy?
Yes, here
okay.
I am.
Go ahead.
Hi. Okay, so I was, I wanted to call about my daughter, who's an addict, and I was glad to hear the doctor speak about how it's a disease of the brain. Because I see that, and I think that we know very, very little about the totality of this disease. But you wanted to know about people starting, and my daughter never used anything. She didn't drink or smoke or anything, but she had really chronic mental health issues all through growing up with anxiety and depression. And when she was 19, she discovered that smoking pot just relaxed her and that she was able to unfreeze and have a conversation. And it was a very quick spiral from there to using basically crack. And she went into rehab. She was in rehab for a year and a half. And she's been clean and sober now for 7 years. But she still is struggling with mental health issues. And, you know, it's very difficult because there's basically the approach is, you know, try this medication, try that medication, try more of this and less of that and another one. At one point, she was on 6 different medications, and now she's trying to get by on the 3 that she's been reduced to and trying to find other pathways to being well. But the whole issue of panic, anxiety, depression is huge. And I know lots and lots of young women who are really suffering with that, more women than men, but I don't know that that's true in the population as a whole. And we have to really learn how to deal with those issues somehow, because I think that the reason why a lot of young people, they don't just pick up drugs because, oh, it seems like a good idea. It's because they're in pain and they're medicating themselves.
Okay, Kathy, before we go any further, I want to ask Dr. Michaels if she wants to comment on what you said.
Oh, first of all, Kathy, I want to thank you for sharing, because I think what your daughter has been through illustrates what so many people have been through, that, first of all, co-occurring addiction and mental health issues, that's more the rule than the exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I always say in my office, if I'm seeing someone who has an addiction problem, chances are they have a mental health issue. And
mm-hmm.
we must address both illnesses at the same time. It used to be that we would send people to rehab and say, be clean for 6 months and then we'll deal with your mental health issues. The
mm-hmm.
person's relapsed and they're depressed. It's not going to work. So we have to treat the whole person. And these are chronic illnesses. That's bad news. Good news, it can be in remission for long periods or for life. Also, when we treat addiction, we often use medicines and therapy. We need to do the same thing for mental health problems. Like you mentioned medicine mm-hmm. for your daughter. My hope is she's in an evidence-based psychotherapy, like dialectical behavioral therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy, which really
she's in
that kind of treatment.
Yeah, she is. She's out in Arizona, and we're very lucky because the clinic there has, you know, a CBD approach, and there's a DBD class, a DBT class, but the psychiatrist there is all about the meds, you know, and I would love to see more research into non-pharmaceutical pathways. I mean, I know there's yoga, there's meditation, and there's all of those things, but it's really difficult when a person is struggling
Kathy, there are a lot of people behind you. We thank you for the very important story. Thank you, Kathy.
Bye.
Okay, and now we're going to go to Michael in Burnt Hills. All right, Michael in Burnt Hills, you're on.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. I'm a little nervous, but
don't be.
I've been hearing some really good things, and I'd like to, if I could, very briefly share a little bit of my experience, strength, and hope. As I speak to you now, I'm nearing my 53rd birthday, and I've had about 21 years without a drink or other drugs. However, about 6 or 7 years ago, I had a pretty severe back injury and surgery, and shoulder injury and surgery, all in the space of a couple of months. And due to those, I was put on opiate pain medication. And I was doing everything just right, you know, doing everything great. I was still going to lots of AA meetings, still very involved and all that. But as time went on, I started realizing that something wasn't right, and I started to hit more and more and more of these things. And some time went by, and after the surgeries and recovery and whatnot from those. Of course, the doctors shut me off from these pain medications. And I went into a terrible physical withdrawal. And a fella I know who does some work for me off and on came by right about that time and asked why I felt so horrible. And I told him, and he said, oh, I can get something that will make you feel better. And I was introduced to heroin. I did inject once. I did try that one time. I mostly snorted or smoked it. But I felt I was a slave. I'm a single father. I own a business. I have responsibilities in the community and to other people. And I just didn't feel that I could afford to be curled up in a little ball feeling horrible. So I kept doing this and doing this and doing this for 3 or 4 years. I ended up losing my daughter because of it. It's another story. But I'm happy to say I've got a little over a year clean now, and I'm still very involved in the 12-step program, and it saved my life twice now.
Okay, we're going to go to Jennifer. Jennifer.
Thank you.
First of all, congratulations that you lived through that and you're back on track. But you mentioned the word slave, and I think it reminds me that the people I treat who are addicted to heroin, they're not happy. They're not having a euphoric life. They're miserable. They're enslaved by their drug. And when we at the Breen Center start to treat them, we get to witness the transformation, almost like they've been in jail. They have the key that locks them up. They created that cell. And then recovery opens the door, and they're free again. And so,
it's awesome to watch.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And I just want to say that, too, because many people think of people addicted to heroin as bad people, and they're just getting high and having fun. They are the most miserable people who feel like there's no way out except using. They need treatment.
Exactly.
Treatment works, and you're a living example of that.
Okay.
Yeah,
Michael,
thank you very much for saying that. I could not have done recovery on my own. It took a lot of other people, and it takes a lot of work to stay clean. Thank goodness I don't have cravings or any of that. I'm fortunate in that way.
Michael, I'm going to let you go. Listen, I'm going to let you go because there are a lot of people behind you. I thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for letting me share.
Okay.
Hope you all have a great day. And
thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye. The whole thing is becoming clearer to me as we talk to some of these folks.
Mm. I think it defies our logic. But if we think about addiction living in a part of the brain that's illogical, then it starts to make sense.
Yeah. So I did want to ask you, because you're a doctor of medicine, and you're a psychiatrist, my question is, have you found that the treatment is, integrated with everything else? David A. Phelps, head of the Berkshire,
Medical Center.
I want to make sure that we got his name in there because, I know you work closely with him.
Yes, and I'm so grateful that you brought him up because they opened a new program last year, a rehab. It's called the CSS. And that has been a game changer for our community because it now allows people to stay in rehab 2 to 4 weeks. And that's the time they need to kind of settle down their brain and create the next step in their recovery. Then they come to the Breen Center and it's like a transformation that didn't exist in Berkshire County until David Phelps, Berkshire Medical Center, advocated for it and got funding from the state.
That's wonderful. Let's go to Abby.
Yes.
Abby is on now from East something. Where are you from, Abby?
Patty.
Patty. Oh, I'm so sorry. We got it wrong.
That's okay. East Fishkill.
I got a ticket there once. Yeah.
But not from Patty.
Well, mm-hmm. No, not from me. The point that I wanted to make is that I have two young adult daughters in recovery. Now, the youngest one, she had relapsed 5 times. And first of all, I believe we've found out that ADD goes along with addiction as well as mental illness. We've come to find that out. But my point is we brought our daughter to intake in the throes of withdrawal, and her insurance denied it. What's happening with a lot of the people that I know who have similar issues with their adult or teenage children, their insurance denies them unless they do outpatient first. You have to fail outpatient, and then they will take you into inpatient. But the problem is kids are dying.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Patty, we're running against the clock. I want to ask Dr. Michaels to respond to that.
Yeah, and I think that there is no evidence to support doing that. That's a financial, reasoning. It's not based on evidence. We've been in situations in which we've contacted our attorney general in Massachusetts. It's kind of like the parity issue. If somebody had a heart attack, would we make them go to rehab? And then if they failed that and had another heart attack, would we then let them go in the hospital? Right. I think you need to make a lot of noise, contact your representatives. And there have been class action suits against what you're describing. So, just go for it if you can gather a group of people together.
And Patty, I'm so sorry we can't talk to you more, but we got to take this break. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll take a break.
Support comes from Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. With offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield, stavros.org for more information. The Poughkeepsie Public Library District, presenting author, social commentator, actress, Cyril Vowell, speaking on her new book, October 7th, POKLIB.org. George Heigl Antiques, Ballston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services including management appraisals and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses. 518-396-7974. And from Studio KTM, Red Hook, a hair salon specializing in both adults and children, and introducing the Naturalique line of organic ammonia-free hair coloring products from Denmark. StudioKTM.com. And from Gear Village, a senior community where one can age in a supportive environment at all stages of life, gearvillage.org for information.
We are back with the always brilliant, wonderful, famous Dr. Jennifer Michaels. We're going to go to Louisa in Great Barrington. Hi, neighbor. How are you
Hello.
Doing? Go ahead, Lou.
Hi. I had...
Yeah, you're here. Hello.
Okay. I had gastric bypass surgery about a year ago. And ever since then, I feel like I'm addicted to alcohol in a way that I've never, ever experienced.
And you're not alone. You are not alone. A lot of people are unaware of this. I don't know if you were prepared for this in the process of, getting ready for your surgery. But for some obese or super overweight people, food is like a drug. And we actually can scan brains and see the same effects as drugs when people are addicted to food. When we remove that option of active addiction to food, people sometimes turn to other substances or behaviors. And we see that with weight reduction surgery, not infrequently.
But of course, I know this sounds silly, but there's a lot of calories in alcohol.
But we can ask this caller. I don't think she's drinking for the calories. I think she's
she's not. Yeah,
yeah, she's drinking because of the way her brain is wired for addiction, and
yeah,
she can't.
It's almost like a compulsion. Like I can't even stop myself, and I've never experienced this, and it's very disconcerting, and I don't know what to do about
okay.
it.
Okay. I wish you would get help because you can get better. I promise you, this can get better. It is an addiction on the continuum with food, and I call this addiction transfer. You've transferred your food addiction to alcohol, and there's no surgery for it, but there certainly is very good support and therapy and also medication. So please get help. You're in Great Barrington,
yeah,
is that right?
Yeah. Is there a Breen?
Yeah, there's a Breen Center in Great Barrington. We do all types of addiction treatment, and please get some help because this can be addressed and you don't have to suffer. And if you don't get help, it gets worse. And it's not your fault. Yeah, it's not your fault. It's your wiring of your brain and that primitive part that is reflexive and automatic. It's kind of been activated now with a different substance.
Louisa, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Okay, so now we're going to go to Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. All right, Jim, you're on. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. Good afternoon, Alan, and thanks for taking the call, Doctor. I just had the article in the September issue of National Geographic, The Science of Addiction, and in the article they talk about this, the National Institute on Drug Abuse and the University of California, San Francisco, had measured electrical activity in neurons in cocaine-seeking rats and discovered that a region of the brain involved in inhibiting behavior was abnormally quiet. By stimulating that section of the rat's brains, they no longer desired cocaine. And there's this psychiatrist in Italy, psychiatrist Luigi Galimberti. He read about their work in a newspaper article. He has a clinic in Padua, Italy, and he is doing work with us now. He's applying what they call... Okay,
don't worry about it.
Transcranial
magnetic
electromagnetic pulses to the prefrontal cortex. It seems on the left side of the brain, in the front. They're doing it, and they're having great success with it. Of course, they want to do placebo-controlled studies to prove that the treatment works and that the benefits last. But they've had people who've been off 6 years and 6 months and a year, even off of cocaine, and they said cocaine used to be a part of who I am. Now it's a distant thing that no longer controls me.
Okay, Jim, hold on.
The behavior section of their brain was not functioning as well as it should have.
Okay, Dr. Michaels?
Okay, great comment. And this gets back to what I brought up earlier, which is it's a brain disease. It truly is.
Right.
It's not bad people. It's a bad disease. And so if you remember, the part of the brain that thinks of consequences, that says hold off or let's do this instead, is the prefrontal cortex. That's, I call it the CEO of your brain.
And that part of their brain is not active enough.
Right. And so when you engage compulsively with substances, the actual brain cells in your prefrontal cortex shrink. They become damaged. They don't work. You lose connections.
Right.
And there's a belief, and there's some evidence now, that if we can activate them, strengthen them, and transcranial magnetic stimulation may be the way to do it. If we can reactivate your CEO of your brain, then that gains the proper control of your more primitive parts of your brain.
And how do we do that?
Well, there's a stimulation. There are different ways to do it, but there's a stimulator.
Electromagnetic stimulation they're using.
Yes, and this is a process that's being used for depression. They're experimenting with schizophrenia, but it's a relatively new treatment, and it may be the beginning of a new modality to treat addiction. And it really is brain damage. It's a disease of the brain, and this just demonstrates that.
So how are we doing with cocaine these days? We've been talking about heroin. Cocaine was a tremendously prolific drug, Dr. Michaels. Where is it on the great charts right now?
Well, we're focused on heroin, but alcohol is a huge problem, and cocaine is reemerging a little bit. That's what we're seeing with our patients. So, we're working on a vaccine against cocaine.
Really?
Yeah. There's a lot of research going on right now because we're recognizing that this is a devastating disease for so many Americans, but we're not quite ready for prime time.
Now, in terms of the distribution system, for example, in Pittsfield, where we know some New York gangsters basically came up. What's happening? I mean, is there any effort or ability to control those folks who are selling this stuff?
That's not my area of expertise. I know that there are a proliferation of gangs in the community,
yeah,
and
sure,
that they're really focused on drug distribution. If you read a book called Dreamland, it's all about how a group of Mexicans from Mexico came in and created a system that's kind of like the pizza delivery system for heroin. And I think people are creating innovations. And like I said before, fentanyl, you don't even have to get it someplace else. You can make it in your laboratory, and that's an innovation. So the old style, you know, buying drugs from the corner junkie drug addict is almost obsolete.
Interesting. Jim, thank you. All right. Now, 1-800-348-2551. Probably take a couple of more calls. 1-800-348-2551. We're now going to Jane in Hudson. All right, Jane, you're on.
Hello.
Hey, Jane.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a couple of points. Sound a bit Pollyanna-ish after all these kind of horror stories, but I've been using opioids for about 15 years, and I'm a vegetarian. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I'm extremely disciplined, and I find that they, you know, give me tremendous energy and purpose. And I started off like everyone else with pain, with migraines. But then they started creating all these millions of hoops you had to jump through, and it got more and more problematic, not for me, but to obtain my normal supply. And I knew at that point people would turn to heroin because it was a great deal easier for them to get heroin than it was to get oxycodone. And my other point being, I don't understand this fentanyl thing at all. Because why would dealers kill their customers? It just doesn't make any sense on any level.
Okay, those are good questions. Over to Dr. Michaels.
So I think the goal is not to kill your customers. It's to make a more desirable product. And what's really sad is you will see that one person overdoses in a community and the other people who are using in that community think, that must be really good stuff. How do I get that stuff?
Do we indict these people for murder when they do this?
Some people have been indicted for selling. I know of someone who was indicted for manslaughter for selling her fentanyl patches, and the person died.
Wow.
And it can be challenging to get that conviction, but it has happened. John Belushi's person I think the drug dealer ended up going to jail because he overdosed. So
Jane,
it's hard to do.
Jane, good call. Thank you. All right. Now we're going to go to Dave in Saratoga Springs. Okay, Dave in Saratoga Springs, you're on.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. I've just recently lost a family member to addiction, heroin, 24-year-old. You know, in the extended family. And something that I had learned about, oddly enough, through an episode of Law & Order several years ago, was a treatment modality that is apparently not condoned in the United States, but there are several clinics around the world that treat heroin, smoking cessation, alcoholism, with a psychotropic substance called ibogaine, and I was interested in Dr. Michael's perspective on that.
Okay, great. Here you go,
yes.
Doctor.
So thank you. Ibogaine has been around for many decades, and it was controversial when I was training at Bellevue, and it's still controversial today. It's derived from a plant in Africa. It is a hallucinogen. And it's also what we call a dissociative, like people don't feel their bodies. And there is some research that supports that perhaps it reduces cravings. There have been problems, though. There was a study that had 33 people who got ibogaine for heroin addiction, and most of them reported some reduction in cravings. One of them died. And what they're finding is it can have cardiotoxic effects and very significant drug-drug interactions. And we're not seeing long-term studies. But what we are seeing is that perhaps a component of ibogaine that's safer, that's not cardiotoxic, may be useful in addressing early cravings. We don't have all the facts, but we need to get more of the facts.
So some of these clinics from there's like Costa Rica and some in Canada and Amsterdam, they're making claims of like 75% or 80% recovery rate.
Okay, Jen?
No, I would be very careful when we have so many other treatment modalities available that are road tested and safe and in our country. I do not recommend currently going to other countries with a medicine that we don't quite know enough about.
Dave, thank you. All right, now we're going to go to Greg in Saratoga. Greg in Saratoga, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to comment that I was recently reading an article about the increase in pornography or sex addiction. I was wondering what the doctor's thoughts were on that and if she knew of any good treatments for this, rising addiction.
Well, first of all, I think it is a huge problem. There's a movie, it can be heterosexual sex or gay sex, but there's actually a documentary called Chemsex, about that very strong connection between substance use and sex, and this is in the gay community. So in some communities, it's reaching epidemic proportions. We don't have a quick medication to help. I think 12-step programs have shown benefits, and also cognitive behavioral therapy. It's more of a talk therapy than a medication therapy, although sometimes antidepressants can be useful if that's part of the picture, too.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we'll go now to Tom in Lanesboro. Okay, Tom, your turn. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Can you folks hear me?
We can, but you got to go fast because we're running out of time. Go ahead, Tom.
Thank you very much, Alan. I'm calling on behalf of a very good friend who recently disclosed to me that he has, over the past couple of years, developed a very serious opiate addiction and disclosed also that he, in fact, has contemplated suicide in connection with that. I'm obviously very concerned for him. And I'm calling because he is also a well-respected professional. And one of his primary concerns is seeking help, and if he does, whether or not his seeking help will be kept confidential such that it would hopefully not impact his professional status. I was wondering whether Dr. Michaels might be able to comment on that particular situation.
Good. Okay, Jen?
Okay. First of all, this guy needs treatment. Your friend needs treatment. And it is confidential treatment. He doesn't have to be treated in his community. The easiest way to access treatment is to call the crisis team at the Breen Center. You said you're in Lanesboro. The crisis team at the Breen Center is countywide, available 24/7. The number is 413-499-0412. And they will help him get the correct treatment while protecting his confidentiality. But I would make that call today, given what you're describing.
I appreciate your help. I will forward that information to him. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We really don't have a lot of time left. We may have time to get a real fasty in here. Let's go to Bruce in Kingston. Bruce, you got to go fast. What's your one-liner? Go ahead.
Well, a little more. Years ago, I was in Laos, and I was introduced to marijuana, where it was legal and very strong. The Laos had a word for it called sa, and I liked it very much because it did slow things down, which is what they meant. And when I came back to this country, I was in the first heroin epidemic. I never used heroin, but I did find that it did slow things down, made me late sometimes. But it also focused me artistically because I was doing a lot of editing on video. So I found some beneficial aspects, including made small talk easier and prolonged sex. But the artistic focus really hooked me for a while.
Okay. Listen, Bruce, you got to stop there. Dr. Michaels, response?
I would just recommend in general that people avoid using a substance to become a better writer, painter, musician, because it may help initially, but usually there's a tipping point. If we look at Hemingway and, you know, other famous artists, that usually they're better without a substance ultimately and for the long term.
Well, thank you, Bruce. We're going to have to leave on the line Joan of Rhinebeck, who wanted to know, Jennifer, about is hoarding an addiction? Can be, right?
It can be. I mean, it's on the spectrum.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And Robin in New York, young kids being jailed for minor use of drugs.
I think there are better ways to help young people who have substance issues than putting them in jail.
We are out of time. I want to thank Dr. Jennifer Michaels of the Breen Center for being with us today. She's our star. Support for Medical Monday comes from Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts, an independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years, the-gazebo.com. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Beloy. Thanks to our wonderful Colleen O'Connell for answering the phones. Our producer, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Stay tuned now for a news update.